Welcome to the first of two big interviews today on the show. Very different interviews because one's going to be focused more on the market, the other more on the economy. This is the market one because I'm joined right now by Nate Velarde. He is partner and portfolio manager at Chautauqua Capital. If you want to learn more about Chautauqua Capital Management, you go to chautauquacapital.com. If you want to spell Chautauqua, go to the Money Life Show recent and upcoming guest page. Find Nate Velarde there and follow the link because, yeah, I'm not going to spell Chautauqua for you. Nate Velarde, thanks so much for joining me on Money Life.
Oh, thanks for having me, Chuck.
We should maybe give just a hair of background before we just jump in and say, let's talk about the market. At Chautauqua, you are classic stock pickers. You believe in concentrated portfolios where you are high conviction and long term. Like, let's try to buy things that we don't have to turn over. Let's do all the right things where we're, you know, that will make us tax efficient, that will put us in the right places, etc. And we've heard a lot broadly about the market, about how we've been rotating, how things are changing, how things are going to change further as inflation and interest rates continue on a path that seems to be at least mildly upward, if not more than mildly upward. So for you as a long-term investor, are you at a spot where anything has changed? If you're looking for high conviction, are your convictions changing at all right now?
No, like you said, markets change, and you know, we're still focused on, you know, our core principles and in terms of what we're looking for, and you know, those are, we're looking for companies exposed to durable long-term growth trends that also possess a competitive advantage that enables them to capture the lion's share of the profits generated by those trends. And finally, that they can be purchased at reasonable valuations. And when you think about those kind of criteria, each of them is pretty high hurdle in their own right, but it's an even higher bar when all three are required for entry into our portfolio. And so, you know, that starting from that starting point, it explains, you know, why, as you mentioned, that we are concentrated and why we think it's the best way, you know, over the long term to compound our clients' wealth. So, you know, with those core principles, perhaps with markets sort of changing tactically, the emphasis may be on different parts of those criteria. Like, for example, with, you know, we seem to be moving into an era of higher interest rates. So in our process, you know, we're going to be more focused on valuations as sort of longer term, longer duration growth companies are negatively impacted by higher interest rates. But, you know, still they need to possess all three criteria for us for inclusion in our portfolio.
The pandemic, for a lot of people, it accelerated certain trends. It made them say, oh, I want to be ahead of this or get away from that. And we're now seeing some of that change. If you're still buying the same things, does that mean that you're focused more on, hey, let's go with boring? Let's, you know, not go to the things that are necessarily riding the temporary crests? And how does that mean you're looking at the recovery and where to be invested in the economic recovery?
It's true that the pandemic accelerated the trends for many of our portfolio companies. And, you know, given that our performance in 2020 was very good, but you know, now that we're in 2021, it's largely reflected in the price. And so one of the things that I think even before the pandemic, one of the things that was scarce for a very long time was growth. And so what's different this time, now that we're recovering from the pandemic, is that growth in a general sense is no longer scarce. And that's why you've seen a rotation this year into, you know, more value-oriented sectors, because sort of the kind of playing field from a, you know, year over year growth standpoint has been sort of levelized by the fact that value companies are coming off very easy comparables, whereas growth companies in a general sense didn't suffer a downturn in earnings during the pandemic. And so, you know, in a word, have tougher comps. So that explains the sort of rotation that you've been seeing into, you know, more value-oriented sectors, which, you know, in a way is sort of starting to open up opportunities again in the growth space, which we're always looking for to exploit.
So in the growth space right now, is there a, for instance, I mean, there's so much that falls under growth. I'm trying to come up with the idea of what you consider the sweet spot or what's an example.
Well, I mean, one big example is that, you know, is sort of large cap, very profitable technology companies that in the first quarter continue to post very strong earnings, but have seen their multiples compress. You know, in our portfolio, in our global portfolio, one of the things that we pay attention to is sort of relative valuations. And one of the things that we do as a discipline is to force rank our portfolio in terms of revenue growth, returns on capital, and valuations. And what we saw, you know, so far in 2021 was that the companies that, you know, that were highly ranked on that list, you know, the companies that started to move up in terms of attractiveness on those criteria, you know, were the big tech names as they sort of underperformed, you know, particularly when rates spiked, you know, in the first quarter. So names like Amazon and Google in the U.S. and internationally, you know, Alibaba and Prosus, you know, sort of the large mega cap tech names started to become more attractive on valuations as they got left behind in the value sort of rotation. So that's where we're finding tactical opportunities in growth.
Well, you know, it's been interesting because very few people have been talking about things like the FANG stocks that during the beginning of the pandemic were the places that everybody was gravitating to. You've obviously talked about a couple of those kinds of stocks. Is this a case where we're coming back to the biggest caps because once we digest this recovery, we'll see a drop off across the board, but the biggest companies have the power to stay? Or is this a case where it's more based on the valuation because we did rotate away from the large caps as we started to let everybody else participate in the recovery?
Yeah, I would say it's both factors. One, that, as you mentioned, with valuations, they were left behind here and actually, you know, sold off despite posting good numbers. And I would say that if you kind of listen closely to a lot of our company's sort of commentary sort of in the fourth quarter and first quarter conference calls, there were some disappointments, not around the top line numbers they were reporting, but in terms of the profit numbers that they were sort of either guiding to or actually put up. And one factor, you know, in that disappointment, one of the reasons why they, you know, maybe that profit outlook wasn't as strong as some people hoped or expected was that these companies were plowing money back into growth investments. And that's probably the right thing to do as a company, where when your top line is very strong and you think that your, you know, 5-year outlook is very good, so you should press your advantage at this point in time, particularly when coming out of a pandemic, your competitors, you know, didn't fare as well and are relatively weaker. So these investments, while, you know, negative to profit growth in the short run, are setting the stage for more robust growth in a 5-year view, which is where we like to, you know, we're always looking in a 3-to-5-year view. And so from our perspective, with the sort of pullback in these company stocks, plus we think that they're fundamental position longer term is actually going to become stronger, you know, hence we're selectively adding to those positions in our portfolio.
You know, you talk about that long-term perspective. I'm curious because individual investors will tell me, oh, I try to have a long-term perspective, and then, you know, something happens and I'm judging and I say, well, okay, I have a long-term perspective. The long-term no longer looks so good based on what's just happened here. So I'm making a change. In other words, they let the recent news impact their long-term. How often do you wind up having to say, okay, we're into this process. We bought this thinking we've got a 5-to-10-year horizon. That's what we're looking for. We truly believe in it. But oh, by the way, we need to kind of kick ourselves to remind ourselves that, yeah, we thought it could maybe have a period on the way to those 5 or 10 year good gains that would be ugly. Because, like I said, the difference between portfolio managers and individual investors is that they get out and you hopefully are staying in, or are you?
That's a great point. I mean, the one thing that impacts, you know, most individual investors' returns is, buying high and selling low. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, again, going back to our investment philosophy, is that we believe in these companies for the long term. And the third part of our process is, you know, can be purchased at a reasonable valuation. And usually with a great company, the only way that happens is that there's a temporary dislocation, you know, where things don't go right for a very, you know, for an extended period of time. And that creates the opportunity to do purchase these companies, these great franchise companies at very attractive valuations, and then hold them on for the long term. Because that's the way that the business works, is that you just have to be prepared for the opportunities. And that's the benefit of also holding a very concentrated portfolio and a very small team that's actually able to act nimbly to sort of, you know, we spend a lot of our time focused on researching companies that at the moment we won't buy because of either a valuation issue, mostly a valuation issue, it's just too expensive, but we do the work and we're prepared for situations, because all companies, no matter what they are, you know, growth companies, value companies, go through a period of an extended drawdown. There is no company that goes up in a, you know, 45-degree angle for 10 years in a row. I think if you, you know, the example I always use is a company like Amazon, that in one period of it's great when you're looking at from the top of the mountain, but there was a point in time, you know, a decade ago or more, where there was a 90% drawdown in an Amazon, and there have been multiple 30% to 50% drawdowns in Amazon. And the point is that if you identify, you know, a strong franchise and are prepared to wait for a good entry point, you know, are able to even hold on through those temporary drawdowns, it sets the stage for great compounding returns over time. And that's what we try to do.
We haven't talked a lot about domestic versus international and where in the world you want to be. But given that you're looking for those opportunities, and the fact that you did talk a little bit as well about one or two international stocks as you were doing there, right now, as you're looking out, are you finding that valuations are better around the world, that the opportunity set is different as the recovery plays are different because everybody's recovering from a different take on COVID?
Yeah, I mean, even before COVID, though, I would say when you start with valuation, U.S. valuations, you know, from an index level, were already at sort of all-time highs relative to international valuations, and that still remains the case. I think I, you know, if you look at the CAPE ratio, is sort of an imperfect ratio, but, you know, in general, the U.S. is like near 40 times on a CAPE ratio basis, whereas the international, selective international markets are as cheap as 16 to 25. So, you know, that's a huge valuation gap. So just from valuations alone, one should be very interested in international markets. Also, you know, with valuations as a strong starting point, there's this perception that particularly in sort of growth areas like technology or healthcare, that, you know, all the great technology and healthcare companies are somehow based in the U.S., you know, and particularly California. But that isn't necessarily the case. You know, a company that we've owned, you know, since the inception of the strategy 15 years ago is ASML. And ASML is a company that probably not too many people have heard of, but it's actually critical to all the big trends that are going on in technology today, from artificial intelligence, machine learning, the Internet of Things. And because ASML is the de facto company that makes Moore's Law possible in terms of being able to, you know, increase the processing power of chips and reduce their power consumption.
Nate, great stuff. I have more questions. I just don't have more time. But thanks so much for joining us. I hope we'll get a chance to do this again down the line sometime.
Okay. Appreciate it, Chuck. Thank you very much.
That's Nate Velarde. He's partner and portfolio manager at Chautauqua Capital Management. ChautauquaCapital.com is the website for more information. Later on, Kathy Bosjancic from Oxford Economics USA will be here for our other big interview. Stick around. This is Money Life.